Okay, I think everybody's back on the call today. It is August 5th. Ooh, it's my brother's birthday. I better remember to call him. Anyway, and we're going to talk a little bit at the beginning of this call about balance and trying to find balance for yourself and for your children too, because sometimes we get out of balance with the different things that we're trying to do in our lives, the different areas of focus that we have, and we don't even realize that we're out of balance because we feel like, well, we're just going from the next crisis to the next crisis and the next important thing to the next important thing. But balance is really important. I know one time I wrote an article that was something like, balance, what's that? I don't know if it's completely, you know, possible. Sometimes I feel like one of those plate spinners at a circus, you know, where I just spin the one that is going to fall next, and then I spin the next one that's going to fall next. And as a parent and as a person who, you know, is involved in a lot of different things like I am, sometimes it really is like that. You're just keeping everything balanced by spinning the plate that's going to fall, you know, first. But there also is a way to keep your priorities in check and to teach your children early on to keep their priorities in check, so that these outside interests or areas of focus that we add into our lives don't take over the family and don't make it so that the family has a problem. So we're going to talk about that. I want to share with you a story. So I happened to be meeting with a family this last week in their home, and I was talking with this mother and father and this son. And they were having some problems, some communication problems, and some problems with being connected, and they all wanted some different things. They wanted, you know, the son wanted more freedom, the parents wanted more respect. They all had some mutual concerns that they were worried about. And so we sat down, we started talking about their relationships in the family. We realized that they weren't completely clear on whose role was what. Now, I know that seems kind of silly that you wouldn't know, like, well, as a mother, this is what I do. I think everybody knew who they wanted to be, but they weren't always staying within their own role, or they weren't doing it the very best they could. Especially, I think, the son. He had a hard time understanding what the parent roles really were. And before you can respect something, I think you have to have a firm understanding of what it is. So we sat down and we talked at length about the different roles and about you know, what that meant and how they saw each other in their roles and maybe even some of the problems that they perceived they had with, you know, fulfilling their role in the family. And it was very interesting that they came to this conclusion that they all needed to respect each other's roles a little bit better, and that then their communication would improve, because that is generally what happens when somebody is choosing not to respect another person, is because they're not acknowledging that they have a certain responsibility and or that they are at a certain place. And so that's always usually a very good place to start. So we started there and talked with them about that, and that was really great. And then we talked about what respect meant and how to show respect to each other, because this is very key, and it was obviously a big issue in the family, which is why they had me come out and observe some things and have some consulting time with them. And what we came to was that the respect was linked into the roles. They had to understand the roles first, otherwise the respect was not really existent. Also, that because they were in crisis mode in their relationship, respect is kind of like an afterthought. Like, they throw it around, the word around, but aren't necessarily living it, because they're living for the crisis instead of living for the relationship. Whenever you're in crisis, that is the perfect time to pull back and say, whatever's going to happen in the crisis, I can't always 100% control. I'm going to try my best, But the most important thing is that I connect with the people around me. And you'll find that the people who successfully go through crises, that is what they do. When they're having a hard time, they start to connect instead of start to just solve problems. Because if you just try to solve problems, you'll end up doing it. If you're in crisis mentality, you'll end up doing it in a very disconnected way. And if you start to solve problems being disconnected, then people start to feel abused. And the respect in your relationship completely disappears, and usually it's very counterproductive, so that you don't actually end up fixing the problems you think that you're going to fix. So I guess the thing is, you have to feel secure and not stressed, even when you are in a really hard time. I know that's easier said than done. It seems like, well, when I'm overwhelmed, obviously I'm stressed. But use it as a trigger that when you're overwhelmed or things start falling apart in your life, you lose your job, you lose your house, you know, whatever it is. And this family that I was talking to has had, you know, a lot of problems very similar in magnitude to things like that. And the stress was taking over. And if the stress takes over, the relationships fall apart. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the most important thing, no matter where you live or what job you have, is the people that surround you, the people in your family, the people that you love. So we talked about respect and what that meant. And we went into some great detail. I'm not going to spend tons of time right now because I want to talk about the balance issue. But I want to mention before we do that just a few of the other things that were important for this family, in case some of them might be things you might need to start pondering in your own family. We talked with them about how your actions and feelings are interpreted. So we took some time to really share how your feelings are interpreted to, you know, how another person interprets your feelings. So what was happening and what that actually means. As you're parenting your children and you're giving them reasons, so we talk about rationales, as you're giving them rationales for the things that they are doing and why they wouldn't want to do that again, always one of the perfect rationales that I share with my children is how they are going to be interpreted by other people. And most importantly, how they're going to be interpreted by me. So I might say something like, trying to think, I just did this yesterday, actually. I'm trying to remember the situation. Oh, right. Okay, so we're at the campground, and my son just took off to go and play basketball, and he didn't tell anybody where he was going. Now, when we go to campgrounds and stuff like that, oftentimes my children sort of treat them as like, oh, now we have this huge yard, right? And so they just kind of forget that they should be telling me where they're going, that it's more like a neighborhood and not like a yard. So anyway, he just takes off. So then I had to go find him where he was. I had a good idea, you know. So I went and found him, and I said, you know, I know that you love to come over and play basketball here on the hoop, but a few moments ago, we were wondering where you were. And so we had to look for you because you chose not to tell us where you were going. And when you don't tell us where you're going, then we assume that you might be wanting to ditch on setup with the trailer or, you know, some of your camp responsibilities. And I'm sure that's not the impression that you're trying to send. So it's always better for you to just tell us where you're going or ask if you can go a certain place, and then we'll let you know if that's okay. All right? You know, and then we talked about that. Anyway, so, but I had to give him, you know, and I'm not going to go along with the rest of the interaction that I had with my son, but I had to give him a reason that was that would show him how we interpreted his running off. Now, whether his running off really was ditching or not, either I read the right interpretation or I read the wrong interpretation, it is very productive to tell him what the interpretation from other people will be. Because that ultimately is how people decide on their emotions and their connections with another person. Now, parents are supposed to be very forgiving about all these interpretations all the time because we're constantly getting, bombarded with all these different emotions flying all the time, because we're helping our children through this difficult stage called childhood and teenage years. And so, anyway, we need to remember, though, that for them to see why it would be a good idea to change, they need to see how other people are viewing the action. So we talked with the family about that. We also talked about how teens, even in their teenage years, still need to do the four basics. Because this boy, he was 16 years old, and he thought that he didn't really need that stuff, that maybe it was too babyish. And the parents were not being very consistent, actually, either, with the four basic skills, because they had learned them at one point, but then hadn't really put them into full practice. That's the thing that can happen, actually, with any new principles that you learn. But, you know, the teaching self-government principles, I see three different scenarios. I see the family that learns the teaching self-government principles, and they realize they have to keep learning them all the time and keep working on them. Otherwise, they're not going to get the result that they really want for their family, because they recognize, you know what, when you make a change like this, it's going to take a long time, and it's going to be something that you have to work on steadily. It's like, you know, becoming a religious person. You don't just all of a sudden declare one day, I'm religious, and it's all of a sudden over. You know, no matter what religion you are, it takes constant, you know, study and focus and everything else to really live whatever your religion is. So same thing goes with any other change that you're going to make in your life. So that's the first kind of people. Then there's another kind of people that they say, oh, okay, yeah, I heard Nicolene talk, or yeah, I read that book, or whatever it is. Oh, yeah, that stuff is really good. I'm going to really try it. And then a month later, it's like, well, yeah, I guess I wasn't able to do it or something. And they just sort of give up because they read it, and they assume because of hearing it and because of reading it, and maybe because of even telling the family about it and doing a couple of things one or two times, that all of a sudden it either should be completely done working or you know, maybe they can't do it for, you know, some reason. And there are a number of families that fall into this category. This was one of those families. They actually were the family that were like, yes, it works, but for some reason, this one child, it won't work. My other children, it does work. And what happened was they introduced it to the family, and the older child was like, yeah, whatever, and they couldn't follow through with him very well. The other children were much younger, and they went, oh, yeah, this is great. I understand. I get more freedom, da-da-da. But they thought, well, it just must not work for him, when actually it was them not knowing how to be consistent with him and not knowing how to teach him why it would be important to know these skills when that he thought were maybe babyish or silly, when in reality he couldn't do any of them. Was the thing, none of the four. At age 16, the, you know, 6-year-old can do them all, but the 16-year-old couldn't. So we talked about that. We talked about what was expected. This I thought was very interesting. He did not know what his real responsibilities were. So he, 16 years old, you'd think he'd have a pretty good handle on that, but he did not really know, you know, what is it that I really have to do? What really are my consequences? What really are my chores and responsibilities? Because it seems like it changes every day. And he felt confused, and he wanted to know what was expected. He wasn't sure what the parent system really was. So somehow, either in the explanation of the system or in all the meetings that they had or whatever, he somehow did not get it. And I think what probably happened is he was so mad that it was happening that he shut down and he chose not to be a participator in any of the meetings or conversations about it or anything. And so when you're not a participator, you end up spending your time judging the situation instead of becoming part of a situation. I'm sure you've all been in something like that where maybe you're listening to somebody speak about something and you start judging them and turning off and whatever it is, instead of going, hey, where are they coming from? Why are they, you know, what can I get from this, even though it may not seem like it totally applies to me? What do I need to learn from this? Like, there's two different ways to be in a presentation that you feel like is going nowhere. And I'm sure we've all been in them before. Or, you know, or somebody's, whatever, talking to you even, and you're like, this is wasting my time. I got to get out of this. When instead you could be going, you know, what is it that they need from me? They're obviously wanting something from me. What can I do right now for them? And so he became the first kind of person in that scenario, I think. And that's why, even though the parents were doing so many things, he was disconnected. And that's why they were at their wit's end and finally said, Nicolene, you know, I don't care how much it costs. We need you to come over and look at our family and see what's going on. The parents really had acknowledged that they had been making things up a bit, though, as they were going. As we started talking, they said, you know, we really haven't been that consistent. We've been trying. For some reason, it's easier to be consistent with the younger children. They don't have jobs. They don't have all these other issues. And so we're really consistent with them, and they've learned it really well, but we really haven't been consistent with this son because it just doesn't seem like it's been working. So we've been shooting from the hip. And one day it's like he loses this privilege, and the other day he's doing chores, and the other day, you know, he can't go with friends, and the other day, you know, and so they're changing it all the time. And he was very, very confused. So one of our big things we had to do is we had to decide on a system that was good for every single one of them. Now, when you make a system in your family, like I have done, like the teaching self-government system, when you make that system for your family, you actually are making something that you can stick to. It protects you. It helps you be able to be secure in your parenting. It also is a system that keeps everybody else secure and not anxious. Because when they don't know exactly what's going to happen, then they just stay in power struggle mode and they become anxious all the time, which was what was happening with one child out of their whole family. All the rest of them were really just right spot on, or pretty close to, probably. I mean, they had a few other issues where, you know, a few other inconsistency. We talked about that too. But so last we discussed an area that was really of mutual concern for everybody. They all thought that the son's life was out of balance. The son thought his life was out of balance. He thought that he had too much time with family and that he needed more time with friends. He thought he was being suffocated by all of this family time. And incidentally, anybody who, I know there's a number of people who end up on the call who are homeschoolers, and so this will be possibly interesting to you. Just really quickly, this family was a homeschool family for years and years, and this son has gone to high school. And the other children are homeschoolers. This family has great focus. They really, truly are all about the family time. They know that too much of the friend time is too much, just like Janet's junk food principle. They know, okay, if you have too much friend time, it ruins the family connections. So they thought, okay, he's going to high school. We need to make sure that we still maintain enough family time for him. And they were trying their darndest, and he decided he was feeling suffocated. And so just keep that in mind. Then they thought, of course, their son, the balance was wrong the other way, that he was having way too much time with friends and that he needed more time with his family. They wanted more of a connection. So this is what we did. We sat down and we did a lot of math. And so it probably doesn't make sense, but let me explain, because it was really important for us to get the real picture. And in order to get the real picture, you have to do some math. So we talked about, okay, how many hours are you awake in a week? We said to the son, what time do you get up in the morning? Okay, what time do you go to bed at night? So we pulled out that he was awake for about 105 hours during a 7-day week. So I said, okay, well, that's quite a lot of time that we have to work with. Here we go. What are some priorities in your life? So he listed priorities in your life. Now, I'm telling you this because I'm hoping you'll do it with yourself. And possibly you have some children that you need to do this with too, so that you can keep things in check. You can make sure they get enough friend time and that your family has enough family time and time for other areas in your life that are very important. So I said, what are your priorities? And these are the things he listed as his priorities. He listed education and family, work, friends, and spiritual and personal. And he decided to hook spiritual and personal time together. And so I said that was okay. However, you could put personal time as its own thing. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Well, actually, I'll even just mention right now. In fact, you'll see when we discuss what else we did with these lists of priorities. The personal time, he was pretty much non-existent for him. He had no time where he was working on improving himself, really. And that, and just thinking, you know. And this is a sign of a true person in teenage mentality. If a person is a teenager in the negative form of the word, because there is an article called The Myth of the Teenager, really everyone should read. And it talks about the difference between youth and teenagers. And this particular child, even though he had been raised fabulously, was not a youth like some of his siblings are. He actually is a teenager, and teenagers are often very afraid to be alone, and they don't want that alone time. If they're going to be in their room, they're going to turn on music. They're going to, whatever it is. They're going to call somebody. They're going to want to be with friends all the time. They don't like to be alone. There's a lot of other things that they're afraid of, and it talks about that in the article, and it is amazing. It's written by a Dr. Michael Platt, who works for, I think it's like the University of Texas or something like that. Anyway, an amazing article. It truly has changed our family and our life for the good, so you may want to check that out. Anyhow, so he really had kind of non-existent personal time, which is why he lumped it in with spiritual time, because he was doing a few things spiritually to help, you know, him. So anyway, so then I said, okay, so these are your priorities, your areas that you focus on. Let's put them in order of importance. And he said, well, you mean you want me to put them in the order that I know they should be important, or the order that I do them important? And I said, let's do with what you know they should be. Let's go with there. We're going to go for the ideal, right? So he said, okay, well, then number one is spiritual personal. That should be number one. I said, okay. He said, number two, family. Number three, education. Number four, work. And number five, friends. And I said, okay, well, there you go. There's your list. It's a pretty good list, and it's in good order. So then we had to start asking a lot of questions. I said, okay, well, let's start with spiritual. Well, I said, let's start with personal first, and that was funny. There really wasn't anything impersonal. I finally said, well, do you ever, like, exercise? You know, maybe you go running or something. And he's like, well, I do that. And I didn't even get into the do you have buds in your ears or not, because I figured, well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and try to teach him what personal is a little bit, some personal fulfillment time. So he said about 2 hours a week that he would work out. And then we talked about spiritual. He said, well, I go to, like, my church classes, the ones that are sort of midweek, and then the ones that are, like, on Sunday, and I do read my scriptures, you know, every day for a certain period of time. And, you know, sometimes, like, with my family, we'll do, like, gospel study type stuff. And so he figured that for spiritual and personal combined, he had about 9.5 hours in his week that he spent on that. And so then we went to friends, and he said, okay, well, at school I get like 1/2 hour of lunch every day with friends, so that's like 2.5 hours a week. I get like, you know, X amount of time class breaks every day. I get these many class breaks a week. And so that's about 2.5 hours in class breaks with friends. And then we have before and after school. Before school, I probably get another 2.5 hours a week. And after school, I get another 2.5 hours a week. And then I've got sports that I play after school, and that's like 10 hours a week. And then I just kind of have hangout time, and we figured when he does his hangout time, you know, there's certain, the parents had been giving him like 2 evenings a week or 2 afternoons a week kind of a thing. And then like on Saturday, I guess, for a certain number of hours, he could hang out with friends, which turned out to be like 9 hours a week of just hangout time with friends. And most people might think, oh, well, you know, when they're in their teenage years, they need more hangout time with friends. I disagree. I think and have really felt from my studies that smaller children are probably the ones, and not way small, not teeny, but like ages, oh, I don't know, 8 and 9 and 10, they probably need a little bit more friend make-believe time than the teenagers do to just hang out with friends, because the teenagers should be focusing on their future in many ways and not just time wasting. When children are young, they can do a bit of time wasting because that playtime really isn't wasting. It helps them develop a lot of skills. So anyway, I actually think it's a little bit reversed in our society, and in my family we look at it a bit differently. So we talked about work. He said he worked 12 hours a week. Oh, by the way, friend time, he had 31 hours when it was all calculated up. Work time, he thought it was about 12 hours a week. Education time, so time at school, he was in class for 30 hours. And, you know, if the teachers are really keeping him on task with study the whole time, then I guess he can count it, although I'm kind of guessing sometimes it turns into social time. But anyway, we gave him the benefit of the doubt that it was 30 hours. He said he had about 5 hours of homework per week, and that maybe occasionally in the week he might do maybe 1 hour of extra something. Maybe he would read a book he'd been wanting to read or something like that. But he did sort of acknowledge that where he used to do more of that, once he started high school, not really. He's not really engaged into that kind of thing. So, and then family time. He figured out that he probably, with family, like even if he was in the home with them, I said, it doesn't count if you're in the home with your family. That doesn't count as family time. I'm talking about time where you actually connect with other people, where you're helping make meals, you're working together as a family, you're doing family activities, you know, together in your weekly activities, you're having family meetings, you know, maybe devotionals, discussions, things like that with your family. Maybe you're playing games with your brothers and sisters, you know, stuff like that, going on a walk with someone. Those would all be considered things that are family time. Because we have to remember, even as adults, we can be with our children all day long and not actually be there. I had an experience where I was with this family. My computer, the mother happened to look at my computer screen, and there's sticky notes all over it. And she's like, is that your to-do list, Nick Lane? I said, oh, yeah, I'll never get it done. And she's like, holy cow, I thought my life was bad. That's what she said. And I said, you know, it's okay. It's not bad. It's just that I write everything there so I don't so I don't forget it. But, you know, how long it's going to take me to get to some of these things on the sticky notes is a different matter. I have to be okay with an ongoing massive list of stuff because of, you know, what I do and the nature of how I try and keep my life in balance. I am not going to be at my house all day and not actually be there. So I schedule a certain amount of time per day or per week where I decide that's teaching self-government time. And after that, I can't do it anymore because I have to be there with my family. So I only allot myself, you know, like an hour here, an hour there, and that is really it. And so that means some of those things that, you know, I say, oh, we're hoping to get to this, or we're going to publish this, or I want to make a video about this, it takes time. And, I mean, it takes a lot of time. And I just keep whittling away at it so that I can be more of help to all of you and everybody else who's looking for family help. So, anyway, I just do what I can. But with children, they can also be in our homes and not really having family time. You can have dinner and you can just sit and watch TV. That doesn't count as family time. You can be in your room, you know, listening to music, or, you know, be in the house on the phone with somebody, or, you know, whatever it is. That doesn't count as family time. And so we talked about that, and he found he had 6 hours of family time. So let's look at where he's at balance-wise. Spiritual, he's got 9.5 hours. Work, he's got 12 hours. Friends, he's got 31 hours. Family, he's got 6. And education, he's got 36. Now, education, there's a lot of time that goes into education. So I think for a young person who, you know, is in that phase of life, that education is going to be one of the big ones. That's why they're going to be spending a lot of their time. So it's not out of balance to have education be a really big number. I have children in my home who spend 8 to 12 hours a day studying and reading and writing and preparing presentations for classes and things like that. And I mean, and they are scholars and they work hard and they sit there and they study. But that is what is supposed to happen for this time in their life. So it's perfect, actually. And I think that they are in balance for this, the phase of life that they're in. Okay, so, but the problem was that the biggest problem was we've got work, which actually is with friends again, which is 12 hours, friends 31 hours. And then the two very most important things, the top two, spiritual personal and family, spiritual personal 9.5 and family 6. So he was completely out of balance. Then we determined, we said, okay, let's add all these up. That's 92.5 hours. Okay, so we decided you had 105 hours a week. Or maybe it was 92. Yeah. So then we decided, okay, you're wasting 12.5 hours. What are you doing for 12.5 hours? You know, I mean, are you doing your hair for all that time or... what's going on for 12.5 hours? And maybe there are things like that, and getting food and, you know, taking a shower and stuff like that. And so then we decide, well, is there a way that we can take a little bit of that 12.5 hours and add it into one of these areas that's really deficit? So we talked about doing that first, and he said, well, I really see that I'm not spending enough time with my family. Now, this was amazing because we came to the table with him saying, you know what, I feel like I need more friend time. I'm being suffocated here. But when he really saw, when we did the math, he could not deny that actually it was just the opposite. And he said, yeah, I'm not really, I do have a lot of friend time, I guess. And we were really conservative on calculating his hangout time. His parents, and he even acknowledged there are a lot of weeks where there are more hangout days than we even calculated in, which means family time is non-existent. So it was no wonder they were not having a connection in the family. He was completely out of balance. So we had to go through and try to decide a structure. We had to decide, okay, how many days really, truly should you have with friends? So if you're going to see them at school for all this other time, how much hangout time do you really need? You're going to have to be selective about when it's going to happen and who you're going to hang out with. And you're also going to have to be ready to accept no answers when you've met your max. So when you scheduled, okay, I'm going to hang out Tuesday evening and Saturday evening with these certain friends or whatever, and then all of a sudden you want to do something else and parents say no, you're going to have to be able to accept that no answer, because otherwise all of your relationships get destroyed and you've got contention in this relationship with your parents and you don't like that, right? Because he had already acknowledged he was really getting burned out on all the contention with the parents. So we helped make a new plan for him. I'm really excited to see actually what he does with the plan. And I think he's going to be successful. It was very exciting to see him feel liberated. When we went through the math, he went, oh, you're right. So I just shared with you, I hope this is useful to you, if you had a teenager or a child who was having a hard time disconnecting or who was begging for friends all of the time, this, or who didn't want to study, because sometimes there's kids who, you know, think they have way too much school time or whatever it is, this is what I would do. I would sit down with them and I would talk about hours. And I would really add up with them, giving them full benefit of the doubt as we were going through all the different hours. And then in the end, taking a good, honest look at it so that they could really see the true story. Because oftentimes we live in a little bit of a denial mode because there are certain things that are easier that we just want. And you know what? We do that as parents, too. Sometimes we just go, whoa, I need more work time. I gotta work more. I gotta put in overtime at the office. I gotta, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then the family time suffers so bad that everything in life falls apart. And so you gotta keep it in check all the time. I know a family, they are fantastic. The dad owns his own business, which is a little bit of a luxury, but he is so fantastic. He wakes up really early in the morning, and he starts to work because he's decided that every day by lunch he will be done with work because he wants to help with the kids, and he wants to do school stuff with the kids, and he wants to be, you know, there interacting and taking them down to the creek to play and stuff like that. And it's so inspiring to see him put his life in balance and to keep focused on that balance all of the time. I love it. The guy is also just a spiritual powerhouse. He's one of those that spends lots of time on his spiritual study with his wife and himself and everything else. He spends time, you know, being in a holy place, you know, intellectually and even, you know, physically. So he's incredible. Does anybody have any comments or questions about the thoughts that I shared with you so far? And then we'll move on with our questions for the day. Okay, no comments. I hope that it was helpful. I hope that you saw yourself in the future, you know, sitting down and doing that for yourself so that you can put things in balance and that you can get out of some stuff. I've been recently in the process of rebalancing my own life and deciding what's got to go. And sometimes some of them are really good things. I mean, there's so many goods. Deciding between all the goods is the hardest part. And that's how you know a person of true character, when they can look at all the goods and go, but this one is the most important. And the other goods, teaching that extra class or doing that extra thing is actually hurting my family more than it's helping, or it's throwing me out of balance. I've got to pull back. And it's not weakness, it is strength, to keep yourself in balance. And everybody has a different threshold of how far they can spread themselves. I am one of those people who has a gigantic capacity. And I don't say that to be conceited in any way. I just know that's just one of my God-given blessings, that I have a large capacity. I also know that all the years of doing foster care were so hard on me, and stretched me so far. I really didn't know if I could handle, you know, any more on my plate with two babies and two teens that were always out of control. So everyone was crying all the time. And what happened was I grew tremendously. I increased my capacity. Right at that same time, I had decided I was going to homeschool my children. So my focus changed to this major educational focus, as well as having all of these, you know, out-of-control people in my house. And I realized that my capacity was growing. So I have a large capacity, but I know that there's some people, their capacity might be a little bit smaller. And if you're one of those people, be honest about it. Don't try to keep up with everybody else's capacity level. Just grow it slowly over time, and it'll happen. Anyway, I heard somebody click over. Did somebody have to say something or want to say something?